Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for coming. Thank you for the introduction. I appreciate that. As mentioned, my name is Joshua Rod, and I'm going to be discussing research on healthcare access and the impact on host refugee relations in Uganda. I do not have any financial or other stake which I need to declare in regards to this research. So to give you a little bit of background, the work that I'm about to discuss comes out of a larger study that I conducted last year looking at different types of service provision, including healthcare services, and the impact on local politics in refugee hosting areas of Uganda. So my research focused on two different field sites, one centered around the refugee settlement known as Rumwanja, and a second one known as Changwali. And I'll give you a little bit of detail on both of those sites a little bit later in the presentation. So the fundamental questions that I wanted to explore in this particular branch of the research that I'm going to be discussing is, first, in Uganda, did the integration of refugee and host health services prevent disparities in health access? And the answer to that, to give you a quick preview, was no, not really. And then the second one, did it actually promote peaceful relationships between refugee and host communities? And that was a little bit more complex, and I want to discuss some of the reasons for that later. So to give you a little bit of a roadmap on what I'm going to discuss, first I want to give you an overview of the research process and what I was undertaking. Then I will very briefly discuss the literature that's relevant to these questions. I'll give you a little bit of a discussion on the situation of refugees in Uganda and at the two sites where I was working. Then I'll discuss my findings and my conclusions more broadly. So. This research came out of 11 months of field work, all of it conducted last year. It combined both qualitative and quantitative approaches. Much of it I spent simply doing what anthropologists sometimes refer to as deep hanging out, sort of informal ethnographic procedures in which I spent a lot of time embedded in refugee and also local Ugandan communities. I also conducted quite a few focus group discussions, both with refugees and Ugandans who are living in the area, and with service providers and Ugandan government professionals in the area, as well as other relevant UN and diplomatic community members. I also conducted key informant interviews with the same sorts of folks. At the end of the 11 months, I conducted a survey of 1,386 different respondents in both of the areas. The survey, as well as the other work that I mentioned earlier, included both Ugandan and refugee community members, and you can get kind of a breakdown on the numbers in each of the areas and who I was talking to there. So in Changwali, it was a total of 760 interviews, in Rumwanja, 624, and you know, the refugee and host members are broken down there for you. So. So there's been quite a bit of previous research, which I've, you know, summarized just the authors who are particularly relevant to this work, trying to determine whether or not looking at differences in terms of both health access and health outcomes for refugees and nearby host communities. And it's pretty well established that at least in the post-emergency phase, it is not uncommon for refugees both to have better health outcomes as well as better access to health care. This is due to the rather intensive resources that the United Nations and other communities tend to focus on refugee emergencies. So, you know, this is rather understandable that, you know, refugees are populations of concern, and so it's not surprising that they would be targeted for additional resources. But it does open up certain questions of health equity, which a number of researchers, including some of the people who are specified here, have discussed. So there's been a lot of discussion of the fact that this is an inequitous situation. Sandorp and Bornemisza, who are both medical doctors who worked in refugee settlements in northern Uganda, likened it to being a doctor who is presented with two equally needy patients and only having medicine to give to one of them. Obviously, clinicians are presented with situations like this all of the time, and the actual decision-making process is frequently hidden by economic and policy decisions that guide who those clinicians are permitted to treat or supposed to treat. So noting the disparities between refugee and host communities in various refugee hosting situations around the world, there's been a lot of argument for the integration of refugee and host services in order to ensure that host community members have equal access to the resources that are targeted towards refugees. There's also been a proposal that not only will this lead to an improvement in health outcomes for host community members, but also that this will promote peace between refugees and local host communities. So, To give you a little bit of background on the situation of refugees in Uganda, this is a larger map of the country. This projects a little bit fuzzy, but this is UNHCR's most recent map, and this indicates all the different sites at which UNHCR is hosting refugees. So I was working in two settlements, which I'll just indicate here. First one is Changwali, right here on the shores of Lake Albert, and the second one is Rwanda, which is located in the southwest of the country. So, now I selected those two sites for pretty specific reasons, which I'll touch on in just a second. But it's also important to note that Rwanda has been hosting refugees since independence. The first refugees that flooded into Rwanda in the 1960s were Rwandans who were fleeing the anti-Tutsi pogroms in Rwanda. And both Rwanja and Changwali, and most of the other sites that you'll see there in the southwest where UNHCR works, were actually originally created in the 1960s to host Rwandans. And although most of the original refugees returned home in 1994, those sites have remained open for the most part, hosting different refugees from different countries over the period subsequent to 1994. So Changwali, except for a brief period of closure between 1994 and 1996, has hosted refugees continuously since 1961. In fact, when I spoke with Ugandans who lived in the area, they had a tendency to forget that the refugee settlement had ever been closed. They just recalled continuous settlement of refugees in all of these areas. These days, it mainly hosts Congolese refugees with a smaller proportion of South Sudanese and Sudanese who have not yet returned home to their home country. Rwanda stands in stark contrast. It was closed in 1994 and did not open again until 2012. In that intervening period, a lot of Ugandans moved in and started running cattle and farming on that land. When the refugee settlement was reopened in 2012 in order to accommodate Congolese refugees who were fleeing from the M23 rebellion in the eastern Congo, the government of Uganda reopened the site, and there was quite a bit of violence between the government and people who were living on that land. A senior government official was killed, and so even to this day, a sizable contingent of Ugandan police patrol that area. So that was actually why I'd chosen these two sites. I thought it was quite interesting to look at an area where refugees have been settled for quite a while and where they supposedly had very good relationships with Ugandans, and a site where refugees were only recently coming in and where there had been violence between the two, well, not directly between the two communities, but Ugandans had demonstrated violently against the coming of the refugees. So it's also important to note that in contrast to many of its neighbors, Uganda has relatively welcoming policies towards refugees. Refugee and all of the settlements noted here are relatively close to Ugandan communities, and the Ugandan communities and refugees share health services and educational services. Refugees have the right to travel around the country relatively freely as long as they have a pass from the government, and such passes are not usually very difficult to get. They have the right to hold jobs outside of the settlements. They're given land to farm on, and outside of the settlements, they're allowed to hold down other positions and also own property. So relatively welcoming in all senses. Okay. So going back to my two initial questions, as I mentioned, in Uganda, refugee and host community health services have been integrated for such time. And so I was very curious to see if whether or not that had led to a reduction in disparities in terms of access to health services between the two communities. I also wanted to see whether or not refugees and Ugandans identified that as a factor for good relationships between the two communities. So the first finding on the basis of survey work was that the healthcare access and utilization does remain pretty uneven between the two communities in both sites. And this is particularly noticeable around Changwali, where refugees have been settled for a long time and where the services are well developed. Hosts were over twice as likely to report delaying needed medical care compared to refugees in the survey work. They were also significantly more likely to report having difficulty paying for medical expenses. Now, in theory, all of the medical care that they get is supposed to be free, but hosts were much more likely to try to pursue to go to private health care or to report that they had to buy their own drugs compared to refugees. So, in both sites, I also found that hosts who within 1 hour's walk from the health services, both refugees and Ugandan hosts reported pretty much equal access to the refugee settlements. But outside of that 1 hour walk sort of buffer around the health centers, it was much harder for hosts in both of the sites to get to the refugee settlements. And a lot of this was because they reported not having access to sufficient ambulance care, which was provided for the refugees. I also found that in Changhuali, pregnant or recently pregnant refugees were more likely than hosts to report attending at least some antenatal care. I also found that refugees were more likely to report having delivered in a health center, although honestly the numbers were so small that I did not get a significant result on that, so that's why it's not reported on the slide. That's actually in keeping with other findings by Orach and De Bruer in the north of Uganda and at other refugee settlements in other parts of the globe. Around Rwanda, the situation was actually more or less reversed, both in terms of getting ANC care and also trying to deliver in a clinic. And I would attribute this to the relatively recent opening of Rwanda and the fact that the conditions, both the roads and getting people to health centers within the health settlement, it's all still pretty rough and pretty primitive. And so I would suspect that with time you're going to see a reversal of that, and refugees will be more likely to get antenatal care and to report. Beyond that, despite the fact that health services were presented to both communities, both refugees and Ugandan hosts in both areas were completely convinced that service providers were discriminating against their community. And also there was a lot of stress reported within around the health centers in both communities. However, in Rwanda, where the settlements had recently been open, Ugandan hosts reported improvements in services for which they were extremely grateful, and they reported very little anti-refugee sentiment despite the recent evictions. So they did identify that the improved health delivery around Rwanda did lead them to regard the refugees more positively. Around Changhuali, despite the fact that by any empirical measure the health services available are far better than in most non-refugee hosting parts of Uganda, local hosts were completely convinced that they were getting worse care, and they blamed the refugees for that. Also, during the time that I was there, there were additional evictions of Ugandans who were encroaching, to use the Ugandan government's term, on the refugee settlement land. So just to conclude, integrated health services do not automatically result in positive host-refugee relations. Host expectations and appreciation do shift with time. It's very hard to overcome the perception that services are a zero-sum game. Integrated health centers do not automatically prevent uneven distribution of healthcare access. Nonetheless, I would strongly stress that there are distinct ethical reasons to push for an integration of services. And I would be happy to discuss that during questions. Thank you.